Hari Om to all of you. Okay, last week we've covered up to chapter 3, verse number 28. And these two verses, 27 and 28, are very profound verses. What Krishna wants to explain in these two verses, that one who has gone through karma yoga sadhana, properly gone through it, purified the body mind complex, then once with that purification, there will arise in us a thirst for knowledge. And when this thirst for knowledge arises, one goes through jnana yoga sadhana, acquires the knowledge of atma jnanam, that is our real true identity, who we are in reality. And when this person acquires this atma jnanam, what Krishna is explaining in this verses 27 and 28 is what is the difference in the outlook of that person who has acquired this atma jnanam. So he wants to compare for us in verse 27 how the ignorant person acts, and in verse 28 how the knowledgeable person who has attained, the enlightened person who has attained this knowledge, how does he act. We must keep in mind that both the ignorant person and the enlightened person are dealing with the same world. They are not dealing with different world. They meet the same world. They have the same situations in life, similar situations. They interact with people, they interact with objects and various experiences in life. Therefore, the difference is not in the action that they do, the difference is in the attitude that they have. And what is the nature of that person who is the ignorant person? In verse 27, Krishna said, he called that person, if you look at line number 3 or verse 27, vimudh atma. There are two words here, vimudha and atma. And the word atma here represents the mind. It is the mind that is vimudha, which means the mind is deluded. This ignorant person who does not have self-knowledge has a mind that is totally deluded. And what does this delusion cause? He says ahamkara. Ahamkara here means identification with the body, that I am this body. Because the person does not have the knowledge of the higher self, this person through his ignorance identifies with the body and mind and so forth. And having identified with this body-mind complex, what does this person, what is the attitude of this person? In the fourth line he says, iti manyate means such a person says that aham karta, I am the doer. I am doing all these actions. Everything is being done because of me. All my success, whatever I've acquired, everything is due to my effort and my actions only. There is nothing more than that. But in this very verse, Krishna has said, what is causing the actions? Actually, in the reality, what is it that is performing all the actions? Going back to the first line of verse 27, he has said, he has used the word prakriti. Prakriti means matter. Matter here refers to this body, the mind, the intellect, because all are made of nothing but the five elements: ether, air, fire, water, earth. So this whole body, mind, etc., which is made of matter, and what is the nature of matter? Science also agrees with this. It says that all matter is inert. It has no life. we all know this, that matter has no life. So if this body has no life, what is it that is causes it to do actions? In the second line of verse 27, Krishna introduces the word gunaha. It is these three gunas, the sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, which are in us, which are the cause of all our actions. So everything that we do, every thought that we think, every action that we perform is instigated and caused by the three gunas. The very fact that you are here is caused by sattvic gunas. So when your sattvic gunas are predominant, you will yearn for spiritual knowledge. But this person who is deluded says, I am the doer. Since the body is made of matter, matter cannot function. The gunas cause the body to function. Then therefore, what is the role the Atma plays? It is the weakness and it is the consciousness. It is what that provides life to this body. So we have three components. We have Atma, which is the weakness, consciousness, that provides the life to this body and witnesses all the actions. It does not participate, it does not instigate any of your actions. Then we have the gunas, which are the cause of the actions, and then we have the physical body which carries out all the actions. So that is how an ignorant person thinks that I am the doer and thus gets entangled in all the actions and the results also. In verse 28, he contrasts that by using the word tu. You see the word tu in the first line. The word tu is to indicate that this person mentioned in verse 28 is totally different than the person mentioned in verse 27. Totally opposite person. So, what is that person in verse 28? Is identified by the word tattvavit. Tattvavit means the one who is the enlightened person, who has been enlightened by this knowledge of who am I in reality. And what is the profound knowledge that this person realizes? That guna karma vibhagayo. That all the gunas in me are responsible for the actions. Guna karma. What are my gunas? The nature of my guna will be the nature of my action, will be the nature of my thoughts also. So guna karma vibhagayo means there is a division between the gunas and the body and the Atman. Vibhagayo means a division. Thus, knowing that it is the gunas that cause my action, if you look at the third line, guna guneshu vartanta. Guna guneshu vartanta means all the transactions that are going on from the time I wake up till the time I sleep, my day-to-day transactions are going on, is nothing but life is defined as a play between the gunas. The way you behave and act is due to your gunas. The way I behave and act is due to my gunas. Therefore, in short, how can you define all the transactions in life? Life is nothing but a interaction between the gunas. And who am I? In reality, I am the witness, consciousness, who is witnessing this play of gunas. I am the very Atma, the consciousness. So, guna guneshu vartanta, iti matva, knowing this highest truth, the real truth that the scriptures are telling us, na sajjate. Such a person is not affected at all by whatever is happening in life. Such a person does not get disturbed, does not get shaken, does not get attached to the action. So, verse 27 and 28, Krishna has contrasted the difference between the person who has this knowledge versus the one who is devoid of this knowledge. The wise one does not get entangled, does not get attached to the actions. Okay. So, he has completed his discussion about Karma Yoga up to verse number 28, and in verse number 29, before he concludes, Krishna wants to repeat a very important point. And this is the very nature of the scriptures. They emphasize a point by continuously repeating. So you will find that many things we go through later in some other chapter, the same point will come out again. Again, few chapters later, same point will be mentioned again. Because when there is a point that needs to be made emphasized, they use the what we call the repetition as a way of teaching, right? So repetition is very important in the scriptures. And what is the point here that Krishna wants to make us understand? That again, looking from two angles, one is what is called the Kritnavin. If you look at the fourth line of verse number 29, the Sanskrit word Kritnavin means one who is endowed with this knowledge, one who is a self-realized person. How is he to interact with those people? Who are the other people? In the third line, you see the word a Krishna Vido. That is the word a added in front. A Krishna Vido means those who are ignorant people, those who are egoistical people, those who are driven by their raga dvesha. They do all their actions based on likes and dislikes. So how is a knowledgeable person, a self-realized person, how is he supposed to interact with those who are ignorant? That is a Krishna Vido. And here Krishna says in the very first line about the ignorant people, Prakati guna sammudaha. Prakati guna sammudaha, these ignorant people who are sammudaha. Sammudaha means who are deluded about the very, very what you call mechanics of action, right? Sammudaha. That it is the three gunas which are causing my action, but these people don't understand, they are totally deluded. He says, Sajjante guna karmashu. They are attached to the very action. Sajjante means attached. Attached to what? To the action. Karmashu. Every action that they do, they are entangled in the actions. Thinking that they are doing the action, they get entangled in that action. Why? Because they can get carried away by ego, by pride, by arrogance. They get carried away, thinking that I am responsible for everything. Right? Whatever is happening, it is due to my ability, due to my actions alone. And these are the people who have very little or no time for satsang, for religious knowledge. They spend more and more time on the materialistic side, to cultivate their materialistic world. So what can a jnani do for them here? Krishna says, what the jnani can do for them here, he says that the man of perfect knowledge should not unsettle their mind. And he calls these people by another very strong name, the word you see in the third line of verse 29, the word mandan. Mandan means those people who have impure thoughts, those who whose minds have not acquired this knowledge. So they are not ready for this knowledge, their minds are impure. But those who have the knowledge, he says, na vichalaye. Na vichalaye means you should not go and confuse them. You should not talk to them about sannyas and talk to them about moksha and all these kind of things. Very high ideals. Right? So na vichalayate means you should not go and disturb and agitate them or confuse them with all this very high-flying philosophy. And that's why it was always the tradition in the past that sages never went to give this knowledge door to door. That's why many times in the Gita, Krishna says, it remains a secret. This knowledge is a very great secret. Why? Because first thing, sages never went to door and spread this knowledge. Because why? People themselves were not interested. So they waited until people came to the ashram, surrendered and were ready to listen to this knowledge, then only they imparted this knowledge. So that's why Krishna says here, if they are not ready, do not go and confuse them. And then what should you do therefore? if you don't want, if you should not confuse them, just get them to do all their duties. Get them to do all their actions. It is not that they are not doing their duties. They are taking care of their family. They are running their businesses. They are giving charity. They are going to temple. They may be doing everything for selfish purpose, out of ego. Does not matter. He says, do not confuse them. Let them carry on their duties. So, a very important point for us here is, once we have acquired this knowledge, what should we do?
Practice.
You practice, and what else should you do? Keep your mouth closed. Do not go and share and confuse people. Because most of the time, people are not interested to hear. They will shut off within 10 seconds. You start talking to them, within 10 seconds, their mind will be somewhere else. Sorry? They change the topic. Yeah, they will talk about cinema, film stars, shopping, etc. So, what you do? Let them carry on their action, because their actions are good. It is just their attitude has to be changed. And that attitude will slowly change. And when they are ready, and when they come to you and ask for knowledge, then what do? Then you impart the knowledge to them. Then they are ready to listen. Right? So this is the final message that Krishna wants to give regarding those jnanis also. Right? We are all interested. We all want to share this knowledge, but be careful who you share this with. Otherwise, you might end up confusing them even more. Okay. So now this discussion about Karma Yoga has come to an end. Krishna has said whatever he wants to say about Karma Yoga. Now, in verse 30, he summarizes the whole sadhana, the Karma Yoga sadhana. He gives us a 5-point plan. So this verse 30 is the crux of this whole chapter. Everything that is talked about in Karma Yoga is crystallized in this verse 30. Krishna simplifies the Karma Yoga sadhana into a 5-point plan. Okay. And what is this 5-point plan that Krishna gives us here? Now, first of all, we understood from this Karma Yoga topic that completely giving up all the actions is not possible. It is not humanly possible for us to avoid giving up all our action. We can sit down quietly in one place, but what happens? The eyes will still be seeing something. The ears will still be hearing something. Excuse me. The mind will still be running and thinking about some thoughts. So to completely give up actions is not physically or humanly possible. We all have heard Krishna say that. At the same time, if we avoid our duties, our responsibilities, is also not conducive, because we are creating papam. By running away from our responsibilities and duties, we are incurring papam. So, what is, and also the third thing is, doing our actions with ego, with pride, also is not conducive to our spiritual growth. So that means completely not doing our action is not going to work. Avoiding our duties and responsibilities is going to incur papam. Doing our actions and duties with ego is also creating problem for us. So we should understand therefore how to do the right action with the right attitude. And in this verse number 30, Krishna explains for us what is the 5-point plan. And who is this 5-point plan for? For who? For the seekers, isn't it? It's not for the ignorant people. They are not interested. So for seekers like you and me who are interested to progress spiritually, and we have to do our duties and responsibilities, we know we cannot run away, then why not we learn this knowledge, how to do everything in the right manner, that we will progress spiritually, right? So it is very important for who? For seekers who want to purify themselves, who want to advance spiritually. So what is the 5-point plan? If you look at verse 30, second line, I will arrange them in that order so it's easier to understand. look at the second line, verse 30. The second word, adhyatma chetasa. The first quality that we should have, adhyatma chetasa. Meaning what here? Again, the atma here. You see, we must not get confused. The word atma is constantly used in the scriptures. Atma can have many meanings. It does not necessarily mean the consciousness. It can mean the mind. It can mean the body. It can mean the consciousness also. So here, the word atma means our viveka buddhi, our intellectual capacity. Very important is that our mind should be spiritually inclined. We must be very clear what is our goal. Because only when we set the goal, then we will be serious about changing our actions and changing our attitude. So first of all, that awareness of the spiritual goal, that moksha is my primary goal in life, we must always keep this in mind. We must not lose sight of this goal. And my life is only meaningful only when it is dedicated to this primary goal. That means I value this goal as a very important goal in my life. Okay? Now, it does not mean that you should forget about your other goals in life. That's why I use the word primary goal in life. You can have all your secondary goals. You want to study, you want to start a new business, you want to have a holiday, all that is okay. But do not lose sight of your primary goal in life. And as a result, you take up your duties even when you are pursuing karma, your desires, even when you are pursuing getting new possessions. As long as you don't forget your primary goal, you will never go wrong. You will not violate dharma because you keep your primary goal of moksha in mind. So when you do all your actions, your worldly actions, with the word dharma in mind, you don't violate dharma, what happens? Even your worldly activities you are doing without, by following the path of dharma, what happens? You will get a lot of punyam. You must not forget this. By doing all your actions with the attitude of dharma, you will acquire punyam. And what is this punyam? How will this punyam be given back to you? Because your goal is moksha, how will this punyam be given back to you? You meet the right people, you meet the right guru, you have the opportunity for satsang, you have the opportunity to acquire this knowledge. The journey is smoothened for you. All these barriers which are in your way are smoothened for you. Because why? You have the desire for moksha and you live a life of dharma that accumulates the punyam to make sure that your goals are realized. So there is a value for us to follow. The progress is there on the spiritual path. Okay? When this will happen? When you keep moksha as your primary goal in life and dharma as your current or immediate goal in life. Okay? So that is the first quality, adhyatma chetasa. What is the second quality? Going back to the first line of verse 30. Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya. Here the word sanyas again does not mean renunciation. Again, one word can have many different meanings. So here the word sannyas means dedicate. Dedicate what? Sarvani, all karmani, your actions to who? To Mayi. Mayi means Krishna or God. So he's saying dedicate every action to, that's why he's using the word sarvani, means all your actions. Not just your spiritual actions, but divinize all your worldly actions also. Make every action into a prayer. Turn every action into a offering to God. Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya. And mentally dedicate all your actions to the Lord. Convert all your work into worship. And there are some beautiful verses also which we can see in chapter 9. Later they will come. If you look at that very famous verse in chapter 9, verse 26, page 175. Where Krishna said, offer me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a water. But where do all these come from? From God itself. So you are taking from God and offering back to God again. That's for, it is not that the offering that he wants, the material offering, but what does he want? He says, offer me with devotion, that pious offering of the pure in heart that I accept. What he wants is your love and devotion. So that's why he simplifies. He says, a flower, a fruit, little water, or a leaf. Not thousands and thousands of leaf, thousands and thousands of flower. If you don't have the devotion, it's pointless to go and offer all these things. And in the very next verse, he connects that when he says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, even before you eat your food, thank God for it also. So you can bring God into your daily life, into every transaction of your life. Whatever you offer as oblation into the sacred fire, whatever you give as dhanam, as charity, think of God in your mind. Every action can be turned into a prayer. So mayi sarvani karmani sanyasya, dedicate all your actions to me. In short, what we talked about earlier, Ishvara Arpanam. Every action becomes an offering to God. And when you think of God, when you're offering everything, you know what happens? When you have God in your mind and you're doing all your actions, offering everything to God, would you offer anything rotten to God? Would you put a rotten apple on the altar to God? No. So you will be very careful also of the actions that you are doing. It is also a check and balance for us. Whenever we bring God into our mind, whatever action we are doing, we'll be very careful that we offer the right or beautiful or pious or pure actions to God. So that is the second quality, right? That is, offer every action to God. Ishvara Arpanam. What is the third quality given in line number 3? Nirashi. Nirashi means, here loosely translated is free from hope. The free from hope here does not mean hopeless person. But here free from hope means free from desires. And desires of what? Desires of the fruits of the action. So again, anxiety for the future, there is always every action, every activity that we do, there is always some anxiety about the future. Will this happen? Will that happen? Will this person be happy? Will this person not be happy? That anxiety, that worry, that concern. And many people get confused when they say that you should not be worried about the future. That means, should we not plan for the future? That means I leave everything to God. Should I not have a plan? Even when I get into the bus, I know where I'm going, isn't it? I don't simply get on the bus and say, Lord, wherever the bus stops, I'll get out. So even I get on the bus or I get on the train, I get on the plane, I know what's my destination, isn't it? Otherwise, I will not get into the vehicle. So what is the difference between plan and worry? Because both belong to the future. Your plan belongs to the future, your worry also belongs to the future. So what is the difference now?
The difference is when you plan without attachment, but you worry with attachment. You expect, but you don't expect.
You accept, but you don't expect. So what is the difference now between worry and planning? Both relate to the future. We must be very clear. Otherwise, they always say spiritual people have no goal in life. Very not motivated people.
Worry is a reaction of planning.
worry is a reaction of planning.
If you plan something, you worry about the reaction of the plan. Whereas planning is do what the right thing and not worry about what is how it is going to happen.
Can you program when you want to plan? Is planning in your control?
Yes.
Right? You can decide when you want to plan. You can work on your plan. Can you decide when you want to worry? Worry is a act beyond your control. Worry has an effect on your actions. Planning has a, what we call, planning helps your actions. Worry makes your actions into problems. Whereas planning helps you to be efficient in your action, worry makes you deficient in your actions. Planning is in your control, worry is not in your control. So that is the difference. We must not confuse planning and worry. Having made your plan, having have your goal, what do? You do the action. The worry, what do? The worry, Krishna says, surrender that worry to me. That same verse that we went through in chapter 2, verse 47. Karman eva dikaraste. Your right is to action. Ma phaleshu kadachana. You don't have any right to the result. Meaning, the result is never in your control. You are worrying about something that is totally out of your control. Surrender that worry to God. You know, sometimes at night you cannot sleep. You have some problems in your mind. Some things about you went through that day, or you have something on your mind for tomorrow. What's the best thing you can do? Surrender to God. Tell God, now I want to sleep. You worry about my problem. I'm handing it to you. I want to go to sleep. And you will find, try this and see, you will find invariably some solution comes up one way or the other in the morning. If you can just get this attitude to surrender that to God, tell Him, You have guided me, I want your blessings, I am surrendering the problem. Because God doesn't sleep, He is available 24/7. So let Him worry about the plan and you about the result and you go to sleep. That is called total surrender. So that means we have to have very strong faith. The problem is why we worry. The only reason why we worry is because our faith is not strong enough in God. If our faith is rock solid, there won't be any reason for worry. So what can the karma yogi do? Build up that devotion. Have faith in God. Build up devotion. And hand that worry over to God. So first of all, we must also have that prepared mind. We have to learn to prepare our mind to surrender that mind to God. And what is the fourth quality that we should develop? Nirmama, which is given in the third line. Nirmama. What is Nirmama? Nirmama is freedom from mamakar, the ego. Because especially when the success comes, the human tendency is to take full credit for everything. But when your actions become failure, what do? It is his plan, not my plan, isn't it? So, mamakar means that ego, that attitude to claim everything, that I am the doer. Again, that mamakar refers back to that ego. So, what Krishna is saying here, cultivate humility. One should have humility on this path of karma yoga. And all, make sure you put in the efforts, but if there is success, at least have that attitude to thank God for it. So have cultivate that humility. That's why when we say the prayers also at the end, we say Om Shanti three times. You know, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So who is supposed to get Shanti? Om? What is Om? What does Om represent? God, isn't it? So are you saying that God needs Shanti because you're saying Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti? Then who needs the Shanti? We need the Shanti, you know. So why you say Shanti three times? So that is called, one is called Adhyatmika Shanti. Adhyatmika Shanti means, first of all, we need what we call the obstacles to be removed, our own obstacles that are within us. That means, may my body be healthy. So we want our body to be healthy, our mind to concentrate on the spiritual path. So I must have not a troubled mind. So first of all, the first obstacle, the first shanti is for the first obstacle, which is called adhyatmik, which means obstacles that come from me, from within me. Then the second obstacle, the second shanti is what we call adhibhautik. Adhibhautik is, on the spiritual path, there are obstacles which come from others. You have enemies, you have people who cause you barriers on your spiritual growth. So these are called adhibhautik, right? Insects, animals, etc. All the things in the environment that can cause barriers on your spiritual growth. That is adhibhautik. And the third shanti is called adhidaivik. Adhidaivik means the elements. Supposing we are on our way here, heavy rain, floods, earthquake, lightning, etc. These are also obstacles that cause a barrier to our spiritual growth. So when we say shanti three times, that means we are asking God to bless us to remove these three obstacles. Have a healthy body, healthy mind, don't have any external elements that cause any obstruction to your spiritual growth. So same way, we must have humility, nirmama. We must not have this egoness in us also. And then we come to the fifth quality here. In the last line, it's called Vigata Jwara. Jwara means fever. And we all have two types of fever. What type of fever? One fever is the physical, the body fever that you can check with your temperature. That is one type of fever we all have. But here, Krishna is referring not to that type of fever. He is referring to the mental fever, the mental agitation, Vigata Jwara. So, our economious state of mind can be disturbed in two ways. What are the two ways that we can be disturbed? Because we function in two ways. So, our mind also gets disturbed in two ways. What are the two ways that we function in? One, first we function as a karta, as a doer. That is, all our actions we function as a doer, as a karta. Second, we function as a bhokta. Whatever I do, I also want to see the results of my action. Therefore, continuously throughout the day, we are either functioning as a karta or as a bhokta. Now, when we are functioning in these two ways, then what happens? That's why our agitation also happens in these two ways. So, Vigata Jwara is, our mind is agitated either as a karta, I am agitated because of the actions that I'm doing, or either I'm agitated based on the results that I'm receiving. Vigata Jwara. And thus, what Krishna wants to say here is that if you follow this policy of Karma Yoga, what is the policy? Number one, keep the spiritual goal in mind. Number one. Number two, surrender all actions to Him. Number three, free from desires and the fruits of the action, surrender to Him. If you are able to follow this philosophy of Karma Yoga, the end result is what? Peace of mind. There is no agitation of mind. There is no Vigata Jwara. There is no agitation. So that is the result of following the Karma Yoga philosophy. And with that attitude, with your mind in control, Krishna says, he uses the word Yujasva. That is, here the translation is, do thou fight. So what does the word fight mean here?
Overcome
what? Do thou fight. What is he trying to tell us here? What does the word fight here mean? Fight here means, he's talking to Arjuna, what will he tell him? Go and do your duty. If he was talking to a cook, what will he tell him? Go and cook, isn't it? If you're talking to a teacher, he'll say what? Go and teach. So what in effect right here means? Go and do your duties. With this attitude in mind, surrendering everything to God, without ego, accept everything as Ishvara Prasadam, mind is not agitated, go on and engage and do all your duties. Which also he tells him later, if you take a quick look at chapter 8, verse 7, page 152. Chapter 8, verse 7, page 152. Therefore, at all times, remember me and fight. With mind and intellect absorbed in me, you shall without doubt come to me. So surrender your mind, surrender your intellect and fight. He's telling Arjuna, go and do your duty. So this is the conclusion of the 5-point plan of Karma Yoga, which Krishna crystallizes in verse number 30. Now, whenever Krishna gives us a philosophy to follow, he is also very gracious enough to tell us that if we follow this philosophy, what happens? And yet we have the freedom to choose not to follow this philosophy. But we should know if we don't follow also what happens. So there is freedom of choice. So in the next two verses, verse 31, he tells us the advantage of following his teachings. And verse number 32, he tells us the disadvantage of not following his teachings. Okay. So let us look at verse number 31. Now verse number 31, second line, you see the word Manava. The one who follows the teachings of Krishna here is called a Manava. Here Manava means a true human being, because otherwise we cannot call ourselves human being if we don't follow the dharmic teachings. So the word Manava is used to indicate a person who has used his free will to follow the dharmic, the right teachings. And what does this Manava do? He says, go back to the first line, Idam Matam. Idam means this, Matam means these teachings. What about these teachings? Second line, Anutishtanti. Anutishtanti here means this Manava follows my teachings. Idam Matam, my teachings. The Manava Anutishtanti, he or she follows my teachings. Who has taken to the words of the scriptures, who follows the life as advised in the scriptures. Okay. And of course, we may not follow everything. It's not easy for us to put everything into practice, but at least there is sincerity to keep on improving ourselves. There is sincerity to progress spiritually. That sincerity must be there. So whatever we can implement slowly, we'll try to bring into our life. Such a person Krishna is referring to here. And very important word here, when should you implement all his teachings? When should you follow these teachings? It's too cold. Yes? When should you follow, or when should you take up these teachings? Now you are an interested person, you are spiritually inclined, you want to progress spiritually. So when should you follow these teachings? Nityam, every day. Not when you feel like it, or take it as a part-time hobby. Right, or on the weekend you follow, weekdays no, you do something else. You should cultivate this Karma Yoga attitude daily into your life. As much as you can, you got to bring it into your daily practice. Nityam, that's a very important word. Not to your convenience. And what else? Practice this with Shraddha. With the third line, you see the word Shraddha Vanto. Practice this with full faith. Have faith. Now, why should you have faith in these teachings? Why is faith so important? I follow these teachings, but I must have faith. Why is faith so important?
So that you don't worry whether things happen.
You don't worry whether things happen. Why is faith so important? Yes.
Any action, any thought, or any thing without faith, it is something like you are doing everything with doubt.
Mechanically, with doubt.
Mechanically. So when you with doubt, you are going backwards, but you are not going forward.
Correct.
You are reaching a time.
But here, what is the purpose of Krishna stressing about faith here? That is very important, because even when we are on the spiritual path, we are doing everything in accordance to the scriptures, we are trying our best to reach that spiritual goal, not necessarily you will see success in your life. Not necessarily you will get a lottery ticket or you get a big house or suddenly one Rolls Royce car will come in front of your house. So, what is most important, when we are going on this path, you will still meet a lot of challenges. You will still meet a lot of adverse situations in your life. That's why faith is very important, to understand that no matter what, I will reach the spiritual goal. That where is the change happening? The change is not external, the change is internal. So we should not expect to see external changes. That's why faith is very important. Because if not, we meet these adverse situations in life and then we wonder whether we are doing the right thing or how are we going. Why, despite doing everything good, we are still facing adverse situation. That's why faith is a very important criteria. And even Krishna also says at the end of chapter 18 also, he also says that who you should not share Gita teachings with. If you want to share Gita teachings, there are a group of people you should not share Gita teachings with. Atheist is true, that's one also. Chapter 18, verse 67, page 333. These are the people you should never share Gita teachings with. Page 333. Never is this to be spoken by you to one who is not austere, who doesn't follow, have certain disciplines in life, nor to one without devotion to God, as you said, atheist, nor to him who desires not to listen. Isn't it earlier we just said, you want to tell people, but they are not interested in spiritual knowledge, don't go and confuse them. They are not interested in listen, don't go and waste their time. And you are wasting your time also. And not yet to him who speaks ill of me. So now you know why I am teaching the Gita to you. Because you have passed all these criteria. So very important, faith is there. Because you may or may not see external changes. But definitely if you follow this philosophy, there is internal purification. So meet the challenges with faith. Understand that if you progress on this spiritual path in the right way, eventually you will reach the goal.
Is it the same as trust?
As what?
Total trust.
Trust, in a way you can say, surrender, like total surrender, have faith. Trust, yeah. You can say that also. Okay. And what other quality you need here? Anasuyanto. Another very important quality. Anasuyanto. Which comes from the root word asuya, which means criticizing or fault-finding attitude. Something doesn't happen and you say, why is God doing like that? You know, why he says like that in Bhagavad Gita, but like why like that is happening? You know, we keep on finding fault in every verse, trying to reconcile that with what is happening. So faith means having full faith, not finding fault in the words of the scriptures. Anasuyanto. Have faith in the Guru, have faith in the scriptures, and if there is some defect in the scriptures, means what should you say? The defect is not in the scriptures, the defect is in my intellect, in my understanding of the scriptures. So don't go and criticize or fault in the scriptures. If there is a fault, there is your lack of understanding. As you all know, that three types of knowledge can lead you into trouble. No, knowledge also is dangerous. Three types of knowledge very dangerous, can lead you to trouble. One is called partial knowledge. You know a little bit, but most of it you do know. Then you try to show off as though you know everything. Right. So the partial knowledge is also very dangerous. One is partial knowledge. One is
wrong
knowledge. Also can lead you into trouble. And third is
no knowledge.
No knowledge. Totally ignorant. So all these three types of knowledge also can lead you into trouble. So don't find fault in the words, in the scriptures. If there's any fault, the fault is in our understanding, in our defective intellect. So here Krishna says, those who have these qualities, that is what? Shraddha, those who have faith, those who don't find fault in the words of the scriptures, follow the teachings of my scriptures. What does he say here? What is the result? Te api, they also muchante, that is, they are free from what? Karma vi, from the bondage of action. If you apply this philosophy in your life, you are free from the bondage of action. That means whatever actions you do, there is no more karmic effect. There is zero effect at all. Because it is this karmic effect that keeps on adding to our karma, adds to our karma. The more you do things with ego, jealousy, pride, anger, you keep on adding to your karmic debt. And because of that, you have to keep coming back and back and back again. So, such a person who follows the philosophy of karma yoga diligently, that person has no more karmic effect. There is no more bondage of action. And now what about the other person who does not want to follow? Verse number 32. Totally opposite qualities of those given in verse number 31. Those who refuse yeme matam, my teachings. You see earlier the word anutishtanti was there in verse number 31, who follow. Now what does he say in verse 32, second line? Na anutishtanti. They do not want to follow. They are not interested to follow. And why is it that we don't follow? Why is it so many people don't follow? Why do so many people do not follow the teachings of the scriptures despite knowing that that is the right way to live?
Desire.
Because of desires. So what do these desires cause you to do? Because of these desires. It is more easy to do what I like, isn't it? What pleases me is more easy. Wake up, sleep late in night, get up late in the morning is very pleasant, right? Pray or don't pray today is very easy, isn't it? Very pleasant. But to discipline, to discipline your likes and dislikes, to change your likes and dislikes, that requires a lot of effort. To get up early, to sleep early, to put in discipline in our life, that requires effort. So because it's easy for us to give in to our likes, it is more easier for us to leave aside these teachings. Despite knowing that they are true, they are good for us. But because of our raga dvesha, to discipline that, we find it easier to follow our likes and dislikes. So here Krishna says, those people who do not follow, don't follow this karma yoga life, and that means they follow their raga dvesha, they follow their likes and dislikes. And what else somehow? Because especially when people don't want to follow the teachings of the scriptures, they have another special quality in them. When they don't want to follow the teachings of the scriptures, what is the special quality of these people? Exactly. They find fault in the scriptures, which he says here, he uses the word abhyasuyanto. They find fault in the scriptures. You know, they say the scriptures are ancient, scriptures are written thousands of years ago. What is the application of the scriptures now? Why should we follow? Arjuna's problem was where? On the battlefield. Am I on the battlefield? I don't see any battle going on here, so why should I follow? Arjuna had his problem, let him settle his own problem. It's got nothing to do with me. So you don't understand the value of the scriptures, because the problems that happened 5,000 years ago are the same problems that are happening now. What are the same problems? Ego, jealousy, pride, anger, lust, greed, desire, aren't they the same problems you read in the Mahabharata that are happening all today, that happened thousands of years ago and will continue to happen in the future? The problems are the same. Therefore, the solution is the same. But they don't understand, so they start finding fault in the scriptures. You know, why should we do this? Why should we follow that? Why should we follow Krishna's teachings? And especially now they say, why do bad things happen to good people? That fool is so good, see so many bad things happen to you. And why do good things happen to bad people? Right? We don't understand. But everything is explained very clearly here in the scriptures. So, abhyasu yanto, they find fault in the scriptures. And therefore, Krishna says, of these people who don't follow my teachings, who keep on finding constant fault in these teachings of mine, what happens? He says, sarva jnana vimudhams. All types of knowledge, the spiritual knowledge, they are totally confused, they are totally deluded. They don't understand what is the purpose of karma yoga, what is the purpose of jnana yoga, why do we fast, why do we say prayers, why do we go to temple, they are totally confused. In fact, you see, even we sometimes don't understand, like there are certain deities, there are so many deities. Then deities also have got different days. Shiva has got Monday. Ganesha has got Friday. Who else? Hanuman has got Tuesday. And then we are sometimes, people ask, why only Hanuman Tuesday only? Other days he's not working. Is he off day? Or Ganesha, why only Friday? So what is the reason that these deities have been allocated different days also? And especially like even Thursday, why we conduct religious classes on Thursday is known as Guruvar. It is a day for the Guru to impart teachings. So that is the significance. So what is the significance of having the different deities on different days? Why do we worship particular deities on particular days? Huh? Energy level of that deity is high on that day. What else?
Focus on the quality of the deity, so that we focus every day on different
qualities. No, supposing we say Ganesha is Friday, why particularly Friday? Why is Shiva particularly Monday? Why Hanuman particularly Tuesday? You all have been following, isn't it?
Yeah.
But nobody questioned. So, just think about it. This, all these what we call prayers, rituals have been given for one purpose, to discipline us. Therefore, if I am a follower of Shiva, Shiva is my Ishta Devata, and I want to go to temple, which day will I choose? Monday. So I'll make sure at least Monday I go to temple. Because I've been told that Shiva's day is Monday. So I'll make sure that at least Monday I go to temple. If I'm a Ganesha follower, I'll make sure at least Friday I go to temple. And then we are told keep fast on Monday. So I know if Shiva is my Ishta Devata, I'll keep fast on Monday. All this is to why? To direct our mind to God, is to discipline us. That's why we are given particular days for particular deities. So if you have an Ishta Devata, you will go to temple on that particular day, you will keep fast on that day. Again, Shivratri. What is Shivratri? At least on that day, once a year, I remember God. I make sure I go to temple, I remember God. And same also like Krishna Janmashtami. We celebrate Krishna's birthday. So at least on that one day, we remember Him. And this Saturday is a very beautiful day. It is Hanuman Jayanti. Right? So for devotees of Hanuman, they will do prayers, they will chant Hanuman Chalisa, they will offer flowers. That means for that one particular day, I am connected to God. So these rituals, prayers, all these what we call conditions which are put in the scriptures are for to discipline us itself. That we constantly try to bring our mind to God. That's why we have so many festivals in the year, we have so many types of rituals. Everything is designed to bring your mind to God. So, but these people, Sarva Jnana Vimudams, they say, why fast, why pray, why must go to temple on Friday, why do this, why break coconut? You don't understand, but you just keep on criticizing and you get confused. In fact, I was very amazed last Monday, just this Monday, I was fortunate enough to be invited to go and give a 1-hour talk at the Methodist Boys' School in KL. It's so nice because they have a religious week every Wednesday where they invite speakers from outside to come and talk for 20 minutes. And then every month, they have a 1-hour session on a Monday where they have an outside speaker to come and talk about religion. So the Hindu students go into the Hindu class, the Christians and Buddhists, they have separate class, Islamic, they go for their classes. And in this class, there were about 150 students. But I was amazed because whatever I asked them, they seem to have a lot of knowledge. They seem to know everything. They knew about the mantras, they seem to know about the deities, everything. And a year back when I went to give one 20-minute talk, I just told the teacher there, I said, you just hand out a box and just see what are the questions they ask. I thought maybe I'll get 2 or 3 questions. In 20 minutes, I can settle the matter. The box came back full with 100 over questions. It was overflowing with questions. So I got a shock. I said, how to answer 20 questions in 20 minutes, 100 questions. So what we did after that, we filtered out the questions. What are the common knowledge they wanted? I addressed it at this time when I went back for the 1-hour talk. Main questions were they wanted to know who is God, why do we go to temples, why do we fast, why do we pray, why do we do rituals. So all these very basic questions were there. So it was good. And a lot of it they also already knew because they've been getting constant people coming and speaking to them also. Okay, so Sarva Jnana Vimudams, these people are totally confused about the knowledge of the scriptures. And Achetasa, Achetasa means mind is misguided, it is confused, it's not focused, right? And thus what happens to such people? Krishna says, Vidhi no Nashtan, that these people are lost, they are destroyed. How they are destroyed? They are not materially destroyed, but they are spiritually destroyed. Materially, they may be very progressive, they may have a lot of material benefits, but there is no spiritual progress. And the worst is that when you don't have spiritual progress, you have basically wasted this whole human life. To attain this human birth has already taken us thousands and thousands of years to attain this human birth. And because of all the good punyam we have built up, we have attained this human birth. From this human birth, we can attain God. But what do we do with this life? We destroy the very purpose of human birth. And therefore, it is not necessary that you will get, according to our scriptures, whether in the next birth, you will ever get this opportunity again. You might have to wait for a very, very long time. So you may progress materially, but when you're destroyed spiritually, the disadvantage is whether you get another chance at this human birth. Okay. So now we come to verse number 33 here. Now, in verse number 33, what Krishna wants to say here is that all of us are born with all the three gunas. But depending on which guna is predominant, each of us will have a different personality, right? And this personality, therefore, that's why the scriptures tell us to take up that role in life based on your gunas. So whether you take up the role of a brahmana, or a kshatriya, or a vaishya, or sudra, should be based on your individual gunas. That is what we also discussed earlier also. And in chapter 4, again, Krishna will talk about this caste system, which is a very badly understood, misinterpreted system. It is not man-made, it is God-made. But man has made the caste system into a family caste system. Whereas God's caste system is what? Based on your individual gunas. So here also Krishna wants to say that these gunas, whatever gunas we are born with, we have to take up that appropriate role. There is a reason why these gunas are driving our action. So to Arjuna, what Krishna is saying, you are born with Kshatriya gunas, that Rajasic gunas, that's why you are, what you call, you are having all these desires of a Kshatriya. And when we have this type of gunas that drive us to a particular action, it is very important that we do that action. We don't avoid that action. So here, what was Arjuna's problem? He says that you came to the battlefield as a Kshatriya, but now you are dropping your weapon and you say that you want to take up sannyas. When was the ideal time for Arjuna, if he wanted to take sannyas, when was the ideal time for him to take sannyas? If he wanted to really be a sannyasi, when was the right time for him? When he was in exile in the forest for 12 years. There was ample time for him to do meditation, to read the scriptures, to chant mantras. He had so much of time. But what did he do in the forest? He trained for his archery, right? He trained how to fight, his shoot his bow and arrow. And he burned for revenge to kill all the Kauravas. He was waiting for that day to come to the battlefield and finish the Kauravas. So when in the forest he should have been a sannyas, he became a Kshatriya. When did he decide to become a sannyas? When he came to the battlefield and couldn't face his problems, right? Then he said, I want to take sannyas. So Krishna is telling him, because of your Rajasic gunas, because of your Kshatriya nature, you have come to this battlefield yearning for revenge, yearning to fight. So you should, on the contrary, discharge your duties. You should carry out and do all your functions of a Kshatriya. And that's why here he says again that a person, swasya, knowing one's own gunas, once you understand what is your nature, you should behave in accordance to your nature. A wise person, the difference between a wise person and an ignorant person, wise person, knowing his nature, follows all the activities or actions of his own nature. And here he also says, Bhutani, all the various creatures in this world, even animals also know what is their nature. Even they don't violate their own nature. You won't find a lion who's a vegetarian. You won't find who's a rabbit who's a meat eater. They know their nature. They also follow their own nature by instinct. But it is only man who does not understand his own nature and violates his own nature. So here he says, beings follow their nature, what can restraint do? Now this is a very, not easy to understand, because the way it looks like Krishna is saying that you know your nature. If your nature is tamasic, better you be tamasic. You don't restrain your tamasic nature. So something is not correct. You have to think about this very carefully. Because if our nature is wrong and we just follow that, supposing you are very tamasic in nature, that means what? You are very lazy, you are not interested in knowledge, etc. That doesn't mean you just follow and give in to the nature. So what I want you to do is go back and think about it. What does it mean here? What can restraint do? It's not being negative, it is trying to tell us something. And many times scriptures, when they tell something, sometimes they tell us in a very symbolic way. So we should try to understand what the scriptures are saying here. So go back and think about it, and when we come next week, we will discuss this, verse number 33. Okay, any questions? No questions, we end with a prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Sansajanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat.